Blog Talk Radio.
I said, friend, let me get that for you, as he rolled his wheelchair toward the door of the restaurant I was going in. I helped the old fella through the door. I could see that his hat said he served in World War II. I shook his hand and said, friend, let me buy dinner for you. He said, son, I wish everyone felt like you do. I watched a tear roll from his eyes. He said, grace. And as he sat there and he talked to God, my heart was in my throat. As I heard him ask, we'd all find a better way. And he said, if we keep on going the way we're going, we're headed for hell on a fast train, not knowing how we got there or how we're gonna come back. They've taken the U right out of the USA and broke the right arm off of the Statue of Liberty, put out the torch that lights our way. Then they say that it's all politically correct. Help us stand up now, God, or there won't be no America left. He said, son, for God and country, I lost my legs on Omaha Beach. But that's nothing compared to what thousands lost if we continue being free. Once again he said, well, if we keep on going the way we're going, we're headed for hell on a fast train, not knowing how we got there or how we're gonna come back. They're stomping and burning our stars and stripes, not giving a damn for the sacrifice of life that protects that very right. Yet they say it's just the way that they protest. Help us stand up now, God, or there won't be no America left. America lives. America.
Tune for more gross, stupid, and morally deficient funny stuff like you.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Disrespected Trucker Radio Show on this beautiful Thursday evening. Thank you for joining us tonight. This is your host, Jeremy Johnson, and I am with my co-host, Chris Bikerson, and we have a hell of a show lined up for you again, yet tonight. How are you doing tonight, Chris?
I'm making it. You know, I stayed out of the wind for the most part last night and, you know, was glad to avoid the weather. I know it got pretty nasty across Iowa and Minnesota last night. But, yeah.
I don't know if I can say this. Oh, yeah, we're on uncensored, right? I got blown pretty hard last night, honestly, by the wind, that is. And it blew me all over the road, all the way up from Fayetteville, Arkansas, up to Carthage, Missouri, and yeah, that wind was tough last night. I seen we had quite a few trucks turned over on their side all over the country. That wind was something else this week, man. If you were a truck driver, we didn't like that. We don't like that. But we got a lot to talk about tonight. I'm going to kind of go through a little bit of what we're going to talk about. First, we're going to bring on some friends of ours that are down in Lexington, Kentucky, collecting donations for the tornado victims. They've already collected one semi-full and delivered it, and they're working on their second one. And they're doing a fantastic job down there, and we're proud of them. We're going to bring them on the air here shortly. Then we're also going to talk about the truck driver in Colorado that was sentenced to 110 years in prison for an accident from 2 years ago. And we're also going to compare that to a school bus accident that happened in Cottonwood, Minnesota, back in 2008, and compare the sentencing and the guidelines and the accidents themselves, and discuss, you know, just different things involving that. There's so much to talk about. The censorship that's going on. Those of you that are just joining that don't know who I am and what I've gone through as far as censorship, they keep a close watch eye on me. I must be touching a nerve somewhere. But Facebook's at it again. They come up with these. I just call them bullshit fact checkers, because these fact checkers, I fact check the fact checkers and find out the fact checkers are in fact wrong. So yeah, we'll talk about that. I'm hoping that we can get into the Gary Webb story on our second hour, but we may not get there yet. it sucks, but because it's such an interesting story. But we have a lot to talk about. I'm going to talk a little bit about some social media experience I had last night and the attacks I received, which don't even faze me anymore. I just look at them and shake my head and think, man, you people are just absolutely ridiculous. But, hey, everybody has the right to their opinion, right? Anyway, so, you know, Chris, to James Toler, who's running for office in the 78th District of Kentucky. He ran last year. He did not win that election. But for a guy that, you know, just got into politics as a truck driver, I thought he fared well. And we're going to have him on tonight here shortly. 21%.
Yeah, he pulled 21%, which is outstanding for a third party candidate. So that was considered, even though he didn't win the election, still considered to be a success. And the fact that he really got his name out there, of course, he's going to be running again in 22, and he's only geared his campaign up, you know, that much more. We're excited about James because he is a retired truck driver and is now a truck driver instructor out at the University of Kentucky. And anyway, yeah, you know, we always applaud our any time we can get truckers, help get them into office. So I think he's going to do a lot better than that 21% this next time around, and might even get a W in that column. So
that would be fantastic to see him get in there and do that. And you know, just like that gentleman out of New Jersey, he won his election against the president of the Senate, the New Jersey Senate?
That is correct. The Senate president, long-time, long-standing member. I don't remember exactly how many years, but I'm going to say he'd been the president for 17 or something like that.
Yeah, and that's a good sign that people have had enough of politics in this country. And basically what people really want in this country is, you know, just listen to us. Hear my voice. Do what's right by your constituents and the people, and let's all live happily ever after. But that's a discussion for another night. Let's just get right to James Toler and Short Stack. Those two are down in Lexington, Kentucky, collecting donations for the tornado victims in Dawson Spring. And there's another one. I'll just bring them on. They can explain it to you. I'm bringing both of them on right now. As soon as I get – there we go. We got them both on. James, let's start with you first. How you doing tonight, my friend?
Hey, man, doing good. How about yourself?
I'm great. It's good good that you could join us, and I'm going to – this is James Toler. Like I said, running for the 78th District of Kentucky. You're also the vice chair for the Libertarian Party. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, it's the vice chair of the Libertarian Party of Kentucky, not national, but yes, Libertarian Party of Kentucky.
Right,
I am the vice chair.
That's correct. Yep, there you go. And we also have on here with a Short Stack. You've all heard him, and I usually play an intro for Short Stack, but this week I'm going to contain myself, refrain or restrain myself or whatever the word is. I'm tired. And the reason I'm doing that is because these guys have done some fantastic things down this past week down in Kentucky, helping a tornado victim. So, Short Stack, welcome to the show once again. How are you doing tonight, brother?
I'm doing grand.
You're grand. Grandiose or grand?
I have been on cloud nine since noon on Sunday. I got my spirits dampened a little bit because of the rain today, but hey, rain or shine, you still got to have a positive attitude, and I'm trying to keep a good positive attitude down here.
Well, hey, you guys have been doing a fantastic job. I've been following along all week. I've talked to you guys on the phone a couple times. I missed a call, I think, earlier from James, but that happens in the line of work that we're in. But you guys have been doing a fantastic job. I would like one of you, you can pick which one, to tell me how the first pickup at Walmart in Lexington, Kentucky, how that went and how the delivery went. And why don't James, why don't you talk about that one? And then I'll let Short Stack come on here after that and tell us about the current pickup and what you guys are planning. So, James, go ahead and tell us about the first one.
Yeah, so the first one, it started out slow. Actually, the first day there, we probably filled up like 15 feet is all we filled up of that truck. But it kind of enhanced everything. We had the news media out there covering Channel 27, local news here. And from that, the second day just skyrocketed. We filled up two-thirds of that truck. I mean, we barely was able to shut the doors of that truck. And, you know, it went really well. The people of Lexington here, I mean, they really stepped up and done the good deed, you know. And
James,
filled the truck
let
up.
Me interrupt you for a second. That truck that you're talking that you filled up, why don't you explain to the audience exactly what kind of truck you're talking about?
Yeah, so it was a tractor trailer. It was a 53-foot box trailer, drive van as we call it. So it was 53 feet, and when I say filled it up, I mean, it was literally, like I said, we could barely shut the doors on that truck, on that trailer, and it was shoulder high. I mean, we had it stacked in there shoulder deep with Walmart bags, everything. And so it went really well there. And so we left out. I guess it was Tuesday morning. We left out toward Western Kentucky. Our intent was to take the first truck to Mayfield and we get out there, and we come up on Dawson Springs, and a lady that I know that's on the ground out there kind of keeping me like super updated. She was like, look, she was like, the only thing they're going to really take off your truck is maybe the four kerosene heaters that you have on there. And I was like, well, at that point I called Daniel on the phone cause I was driving my car out, and I said, hey, look, we're here in Dawson Springs. They were saying yesterday they have nothing at all. Let's go to Dawson Springs. So we took that truck to Dawson Springs, got it unloaded. It was late that night when we got it unloaded. But it was, very well accepted. And up to that point we had raised like $5,000 in cash. So we used some of that money to buy some kerosene heaters, wheelbarrows, you know, and things like that. We kerosene heaters, wheelbarrows, chainsaws, and we put those on the truck. And then once we got out there, we used a good portion of it as well to purchase hotel rooms for the people that lost everything. And so, you know, everything is going for the good cause. And, you know, here at Christmas time, look, guys, it's never bad to lose all of the stuff. And here we have a whole city, more than really one, but, you know, Mayfield lost every single thing. You know, not even a building standing, and it's Christmas time.
Yeah, that, I talked to Daniel on the phone, and I wanted to tell him how much I'm proud of. I'm just proud of you guys, because this is the type of thing that I do on my off time. I haven't done so recently because I had to step back and take a break, but usually, I catch my breath. These are exactly the same things that I do on a normal basis in my community. So I'm very proud of you guys. But I wanted to get to Daniel about talk about what happened with the hotel rooms that you offered to pay for first, and then why don't you go ahead and go right into what you guys are doing right now today.
Okay. Let's see. Well, we got up there, like James said, we was paying for hotel rooms and everything like that. And we got caught. We were kind of getting held up on getting unloaded, because everywhere up there, when it comes to clothes and food and stuff like that, they're pretty much inundated. So we decided to, hey, I got to take this call. James, I'm going to send this.
All right. He got shut off there. Yeah, he had to take a call. So, James, well, you know what the story is on that hotel. Go ahead and tell us about that, would you please?
Yeah, so what he's trying to say is we was having trouble starting to get unloaded out there, because they've got churches, they've got school gyms that's just packed and stuffed and of nothing but clothes. So we had a lot of clothes on there. So it was just hard to get to find some place to go to get that stuff unloaded. So while we was waiting on the sheriff's department to call us back to give us the place to actually go to, Daniel came out and said, okay, he said, so we're going to purchase hotel rooms. Let's go on and let's go up here to the hotels and let's see what we can do. So we get up there and we go and walk into the first hotel. And we was like, okay, how many people do you have here, you know, that's lost everything with the storm, blah, blah, blah. And they were like, we really don't know as far as who lost everything or who just lost electric and things like that. And they said, but however, somebody is coming in tomorrow that will be checking in that we do know for a fact that they lost everything. And I was like, well, okay, how many days have, you know, do they have booked? And it was like a week. And I was like, okay, how much is it? And they're like, it's like $570 or some odd change. And I was like, okay, can I pay for it now? And that, I mean, it was like their jaw hit the floor. Like, really? Are you serious? You know, so, you know, we paid for that. And then in the process, we just tell them how much trouble we was having to get everything unloaded. And they're like, yeah, this place here is a joke. You know, it's government ran. They said when a government runs something, it's just a joke. So we got everything situated and we was like, okay, well, let's find some places to take this stuff. Well, they even bring a U-Haul up there and like, okay, we're going down into the rubble. We're going down where people need this stuff and literally packing U-Hauls and straight from there, straight down into the rumble,
right,
where people actually needed this stuff, you know, because in the daytime, you know, they're out there looking, cleaning up and things like that. So,
yeah. So fast forward to what's going on now. How's things going now? You guys are back at Lexington. You're back at the Walmart, at the same location, I assume.
No, we're at a different location now for the simple fact that the first Walmart we was at, we ran them out of toothpaste, toothbrushes, deodorant, water. We completely ran them out.
Hey, hold on a second. James.
Yes.
I lost him there. Anyway, okay, so here's the deal. Where are you guys at now, James?
We're at the Walmart on Nicholasville Road in Lexington.
Okay.
Is where we're at now. So any call-in orders for pickup there?
Yes. So that's Nicholasville, did you say?
Nicholasville Road.
Nicholasville Road in Lexington, Kentucky.
In Lexington.
Okay, so if any of our listeners want to help and they want to donate to what you guys are doing, get a hold of the Walmart off of Nicholasville Road and put the order name in for James Toler, correct?
Yes, that is right. Guys, listen, is Daniel back on here?
No.
Okay. All right, guys, he's calling me. I got somebody I got to pay for a room for. Give me just 1 second.
All right. Well, anyway, if you guys want to donate to those guys, they're down there on Nicholasville Road in Lexington, Kentucky. And, they're trying to do a good thing. Obviously, they're not able to their attention span is a little short right now, and rightfully so, they're busy. So we're just going to move on with the show. But they're doing some good things down there, and they're helping people out, and that's what it's all about, especially people that in a time of need. So, again, Lexington, Kentucky, the Walmart on Nicholasville Road, just call in your order there if you want to donate, whatever you want to donate, and then go ahead and put that order name into James Toler. And they will get it, and they will deliver it, and everything's good. So what do you want to add to that, Mr. Chris?
Well, I'm trying to look up the various Walmart locations out there in Lexington to see if I can give everybody a better exit number or something to take.
Well, you can. It's pretty simple. It's Nicholasville Road in Lexington, Kentucky. But I'm not going to spend any more time on it. We're already 20 minutes into the show or all past that, and I can't have any more distractions. So anyway, let's just move on. And thank you guys for doing what you're doing. We do appreciate you, and you're doing a good thing. But let's move on to the story of the week. And the story of the week, what is that? Do you know what that story is in the trucking industry anyway, Chris?
Oh, are we talking about the sentencing for, the guy that must be a serial killer or something?
Yeah, that guy. The truck driver who had mechanical failure, brake failure, going down I-70, going down the Rocky Mountains into Denver. He had a mechanical failure. He was 23 years old, hadn't been driving truck for very long. He was a Cuban immigrant, worked for a company out of Texas. No experience at all driving the mountains, and he lost his brakes. And he spoke very limited English. And I know that a lot of you are listening to this, and you think you know where I'm going to go with this, but trust me, you're going to be surprised. But guy is, he's a young guy, 23 years old, very, very little experience. He, on his way down on the mountain,
can I interject
he
something?
Lost, what's that?
I wanted to interject something real quick for our listeners that aren't necessarily commercial drivers or maybe they just drive locally or regionally. If you've never taken a tractor trailer out the mountains there in Colorado down I-70, you're talking about, 12,000 feet of elevation up at the top of that mountain. And so if you're not using the proper braking technique, the brakes end up heating up very rapidly. They catch fire. Once they catch fire, the brakes literally burn and you lose all braking ability. So it's not like he was going down, a small hill. You're talking about miles and miles of a steep grade that he was going down, and he was fully loaded.
Yeah, and I was just about to get to that. the thing is when he lost his brakes, it's not like when you lose your car brakes. You know, running a tractor trailer is a whole different ballgame. There's video of him running past a couple different emergency exit ramps, and he panicked. He got scared. We can all sit back and be Monday morning quarterbacks and say, well, if I was there, I would have done this or I would have done that. Well, you weren't there, and you didn't have that decision to make at that time because you weren't there. So I'm going to take it as in the perspective of him driving that truck, scared to death. I remember when I was 23 years old and I drove my first semi, and I was never put in that position, thank God, because I don't know what my reaction would have been at 23 years old. I know what my reaction would be now at 44 years old. I would hit the emergency off-ramp. Okay, that's absolutely what I've – yes, absolutely. But he didn't have that experience. He didn't have my experience. Secondly, if I missed the emergency off-ramp, I was unable to hit it, I would have flipped the truck on its side and skidded down the highway until it stopped before I hit those cars. But, again, he did not have my experience. He obviously wasn't well-trained. He obviously got a CDL from the motor, what do you call it, the whatever. Where you get your license at? I can't think tonight. I'm just kind of flustered. Anyway, they gave him a driver's license, but it clearly states as federal regulations that you are required to speak fluent enough English to have a conversation with other English-speaking people and to understand road signs. So here's where I'm going with this. I'm just going to put it right out there. This punishment was out of line and way too severe for what happened. He did not wake up that morning intending on killing somebody. He did not halfway down that mountain intend to run into a group of cars. I know a lot of you are going to say, well, he should have hit the emergency off. Well, he couldn't read English. It goes right back to how did he get his CDL? How the hell did they allow him, or how did they issue him a CDL if he couldn't speak English good enough to read a sign? So my question is, did he take his driver's license CDL exam in Spanish? Because if that's the case, that's not right either. If the federal regulations state that you're supposed to speak fluent English and read enough English to understand road signs, then you should have to take your CDL exam in English. Now, I'm not trying to be discriminatory or racist, but the bottom line is the federal law is the federal law for a reason. Now, had he been able to read English or understood that the emergency off-ramps were used for the exact situation that he was in, I know that in some testimony he said he was scared, and I can completely understand that. But the fact of the matter is he ended up going down the whole mountain with no brakes, and by the time he hit the backed up traffic that was backed up for rush hour, I do believe they said he was going, and correct me, Chris, if I'm wrong, but he was going 90 plus miles an hour, and he ended up causing a 28 vehicle pileup where four people ended up losing their lives. Now, before I go on and get too crazy with the detail and all this and comparisons with other cases, I first want to say I send my deepest condolences to those families. And I feel absolutely horrible. And there's really nothing else I can say. It's not going to bring back their loved ones. All I know is that a lot of families are going to be forever changed over this. But here's where I'm going to get into my point. This guy did not intentionally kill anybody. Did he make mistakes? Absolutely. Was he well-trained? No. Should he have had a CDL? Probably not. Should he have been hired from that Texas company? No. Should that Texas company have even had trucks on the road? Probably not. There is a lot of probably nots and nos that go into this story before this incident even happened. That is where the system has failed, not only the victims of this family, or victims of this accident, but it also failed this gentleman that was sentenced to 110 years in prison for an accident of mechanical failure. Okay? If you're understanding where I'm going with this, he was a Cuban immigrant that come over here chasing the American dream, did it legally. More power to him. And more power to him for wanting to become a truck driver and do what we do. It's not an easy job. Not everybody can do it. Everybody's, well, I can drive a car. Can you do it for 11 hours a day straight? No, you can't. So, shush it. But this kid was out here trying to make a living, providing for his family. Was not trained properly, ran down that mountain, and he unfortunately killed people because of improper training or poor training, and the fact that the FMCSA, the DOT, whoever you want to put that on, they weren't enforcing the regulatory rules as far as issuing people a CDL. And not only that, this after investigation was done, the company that he worked for had over 30 inspections in the last 24 months prior to that accident, which 19 were mechanical issues, in which 3 were placed out of order. So there was already a check mark against this company. And before I go on and compare this to something else, I want Chris to weigh in on everything I just talked about, because Chris is pretty good at the fine details and explaining things a little bit better than I am. And as soon as Chris is done with his explanation, I'm going to go into a comparison of sentencing, different, a separate accident that happened back February 29th of 2008 involving a school bus that killed 4 children and the sentencing that happened there. And Chris, go ahead. Why don't you go ahead and get into the details of this a little bit finer than what I do? I'm more off the cuff.
Well, I think, I mean, you covered most of the finer details of the incident there. But the thing that you got to look at, okay, if they're obviously holding operators of commercial vehicles to higher levels of accountability than the standard driver of a passenger car going down the road. And that is understandable. It should be that way. It needs to be that way. But when you look at things like aviation accidents, for example, they do a very comprehensive study of everything that went into an aviation disaster. And they determine all the contributing factors. And there's a thing called shared responsibility, where they recognize that, okay, it was partially pilot error, but it was also a failure of the airline to provide training on a newer model aircraft that had a system the pilots weren't familiar with, things like that. And so if we're going to hold commercial drivers to that level of accountability, then we really need to look at a shared responsibility concept for commercial vehicle accidents too, where you start questioning, okay, who signed off on his CDL and what level of responsibility do they bear? Because if they didn't teach him and confirm that he understood how to negotiate a long, steep mountain grade at a heavy weight, if they didn't teach him that and he's never done it, how is he supposed to know that he should have gotten better training? Most people think unless you're taught differently, your natural belief is that if you're going down a hill and you start to get too fast, you hit the brakes and you keep hitting the brakes until you slow down, because that's what you would do in your Toyota Camry. Obviously though, a, you know, 78,000-79,000 pound flatbed load of lumber does not brake the same as your Toyota Camry, and like we said before, you'll end up burning up your brakes. So obviously no one taught him what gear he should be in, how to combine the engine brake, how to use stab braking. you know, to maintain the speed, what speed he needed to start off at the top of that hill at in order to keep control of it. You know, obviously he wasn't taught the right techniques. So where is the accountability for the person who signed off on him as being properly trained and passing a skills test to get a CDL? Where's the responsibility of even the FMCSA and their complete inability to have any type of oversight of training standards for the drivers out here? There's so many different levels of accountability. The company itself, like you said, they had all kinds of previous maintenance issues with their fleet. And again, you know, if this guy was running on razor thin brake pads that needed to be changed, but the company wasn't changing them, they're obviously going to burn up much faster and be less efficient at stopping that truck, you know, than a brand new set or even one that is at the minimum standard of brake pad thickness. So a lot of different things to look at. But then when you consider that we've had, you know, drunk drivers who have gone out knowingly driving high and drunk and have killed entire families, you know, in an SUV or a minivan, whatever, you know, we got those people getting convicted and getting sentences, you know, of 20 years and serving half of it. And so, you know, I just don't see how you can take someone who was not drunk, was not being reckless. You know, he basically, his mistakes were that he was improperly trained. But I think we've got a fellow professional waiting here to get on the line with us.
Yeah, I seen that, and I wanted to get Greg on the line right now. Greg Anderson, we're going to put you on right through right now, brother. And you are on the air. Greg, what's happening tonight? What did you want to add to this conversation?
Well, here's my theory. I mean, and the way I look at that accident, and I studied it quite a bit, and it's appalling at a 110-year sentence for the kid. And like you, Jeremy, I give family condolences for their loved ones and they lost, and that's sad. But at the end of the day, he didn't know traffic was stopped down there. You can't say what you'd do in a situation unless you're in that situation. And you also hit on the 23-year-old. At 23-year-old, I don't know what I would have done. And you also got to look where he come from. He'd never hauled a load down a mountain like that, you know, and he was scared. I mean, there's so many factors of fear that tighten you up. He might not have could have or didn't see the ramp. He was focused on not trying to run over cars. If you watch that video, you can see him trying to dodge cars going down that hill. So everybody's got an opinion to what he should have done. But until you're in that guy's seat, you don't know what you would have done. Even at my age, I don't know what I would have done. I know what my mind that I'm pretty sure I do, but if I thought I could ride it on out, I might have done the same thing, not knowing traffic was stopped at the foot of the hill. Now, let's play devil advocates a little bit. What if that traffic hadn't have been stopped down there and it got away from him so fast he couldn't get it under control and he wrecked and killed himself by himself? No one would know his name. That's just another trucker lost his life. And to me, it's very sad that they set this precedent of 110 years. What does that tell me as been in this industry a long time? Well, these accidents from this point forward, they've got a court case now, a nuclear verdict kind of deal that they can do you, me. It could be a total accident now from this point forward. And they got that court case. Now they can slap 110 years to you. You know what I'm saying? That's how the court systems work. They look at prior cases. So that's opened up Pandora's box for a lot of more accidents. And, you know, when I was in the USTA, that was one thing they lobbied Congress up there. They walked the halls of Congress on this initial training to try to get training changed to get in this industry. This is a weak training course. It's easy to get in this industry. They're not properly trained. Your sons and daughters that's coming in to learn how to drive ain't trained properly. They do not have enough hours. They don't have four seasons training. They don't have training out in the mountains. They train them in level ground and send them out in them mountains. You know, it's a sad thing that's happened here, that the system is what's failed. period. And
it's a system failure.
Every single day it's failing. Look at the number of wrecks right now just in the last week. I know of 10 or 12 wrecks in the last week myself. And a lot of this is due to improper training, guys following each other too closely, and racing a clock that's staring them in the eyes and telling them they got to get so far before so long. And we
and
we,
that
many of
Greg,
us,
that just came out this last week. That study last week came out that said since the ELD has been implemented, that the accident rates has risen. And we've been screaming that from the frickin' mountaintops since the ELD was mandated on us. So you're hitting the nail right on the head with all of this. But go ahead, continue. I didn't mean to interrupt your brother.
Veterans, I consider myself a rookie, but been in the industry 33 years. Guys that's been here and done this job know how to make the public road safer. There's not a doubt in my mind I can take 10 of my buddies right now, and they put us in a room up there in Washington, D.C., and we can come out with rules and regulations that would help prevent fatalities. And what the American people, for you that's listening that don't understand these rules and who puts them on us, they are people that have never sit inside of a truck. They have never driven a truck. They've probably never even rode in a truck, the majority of them. And it's a failed system. It's not about safety for your family. It's not about safety for my family. It's about the almighty dollar. And the mega carriers want these young kids pushed in way too quick, and that falls on ATA's hand for lobbying Congress to get these children. They're basically children. I look at them as children, 21, 18, 22-year-old children. They're still children into this industry, and they're responsible for 80,000-pound trucks going up and down mountains and all these other wrecks that's occurring. They're improper trained because these mega companies has to have drivers, and they figured out a way that we can't insure them as veterans and truck owners and fleet owners cannot hire these kids and train them properly, because they raise their insurance up so high, so they have to go to those guys, and we call them puppy mills because they just chew them up, spit them out, and they still don't train them. They some that catch on and make good truck drivers. They some that would make good truck drivers, but they get spit out of the system. They don't get a fair shake
in
this industry. That's what the American people need to understand.
Yeah, no, you hit the nail on the head on every point you just made, Greg, and I appreciate that. I'm going to keep you on the line here because I want you to hear what I'm about to say, comparing his sentence to something else that happened. Before I do that, though, those of you that are listening, the call-in number, the guest call-in number is 516-387-1733. If you want to get on and you want to press the number one, and that will bring you on air with us. We'll see that you raised your hand, and we'll bring you on air with us, and you can share your opinion on all of this that we're talking about. And I will get to the callers here shortly, because I have to get to this point since we're right in it right now. I'm going to compare the sentencing to what this happened in Colorado 2 years ago to this guy here, where he was sentenced to 110 years in prison for an accident from a mechanical failure. And, yes, there was a little bit of driver negligence, but I don't put it all on him because he was 23 years old and inexperienced. Back in February 19th of 2008, there was a bus accident in Cottonwood, Minnesota. And that accident was a van driven by Omar, let me get her name right again. It's Oma Franco, I believe, is her name. And she was driving a van, Olga Franco, thank you. My article, I just got it up. Olga Franco was an illegal immigrant, okay? She claims her illegal immigrant boyfriend or husband was driving the van, which ran a stop sign and broadsided a school bus in Cottonwood, Minnesota. It's a little town, southwest Minnesota, with about roughly 1,500 to 2,500 people. In that accident, when they broadsided that bus, it killed 9-year-old Hunter and 13-year-old Jesse Javens. 9-year-old Emily Olson and 12-year-old Reed Stevens. And she was arrested, and she was charged with criminal vehicular homicide for those four deaths. Her husband or boyfriend that her boyfriend she claimed was driving has since fled to his native Mexico. She was sentenced, are you ready for this, to 12 and a half years in prison and was released after 8 and deported back to Mexico. Now, I want you to put something in perspective here. Okay, in this case with the bus accident, we had illegal immigrants that shouldn't even been in the country, ran a stop sign, and hit a school bus and killed 4 children. Now, do I think they did that purposely? Obviously not. I mean, who the hell would do that? But they did. Okay, they ran up a stop sign and hit a bus, killed 4 children. There wasn't a mechanical issue. They ran a stop sign. Is it because they couldn't read the stop sign? Well, I don't know. And I'm not trying to be discriminatory. I'm asking the honest question that we all need to ask. They were illegal immigrants from Mexico. Were they capable of reading a stop sign? Okay, I don't know that. Now, let's go back to this gentleman in Denver, or, you know, the Denver area, where he just got sentenced for 4 deaths, where he had a mechanical failure, where he wasn't properly trained, where he probably shouldn't even have had a CDL, where he probably shouldn't have been hired on by any company anyway, was just sentenced to 110 years when he was here legally as a Cuban immigrant. If that doesn't show you the difference we have between state sentencing guidelines and regulations and how out of whack our justice system is, I don't know what will. Now, I want to be the first one to tell you, does this guy in Colorado, should he get some jail time? Yeah, absolutely. I do believe he should. Should it be 110 years? Absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt, hell no. If you're going to sentence that guy to 110 years in prison, you better go back to whoever issued him his CDL. You better go back to the company owner or whoever hired that guy onto that company and divvy it up between all three of them. And maybe you can go right back to the FMCSA and the DOT and those people that are in charge there that are guilty of not enforcing our current federal and state laws. And maybe we divvy it up along them too. So maybe we can have 5, 6, maybe even up to 10 people share that 110-year sentence together. So they each set 10 years. And then you guys can maybe get your heads out of your asses over there at the FMCSA, the DOT, and start fixing things in the name of safety rather than regulating things under the guise of safety. So since I brought that up, Greg, that sentencing compared to what happened in Colorado, what are your thoughts on that? I would love to hear this.
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't like his sentence at all. I agree with you. He should get some time. Look at the wreck up in Indianapolis when the truck driver comes through at 50 or 45, whatever it was, killed 4 people. I'm not for sure his sentence, but it wasn't that. You know, that was reckless endangerment, him flying through there, racing the clock, and killed them people. I think he killed 2, maybe 3, might even been 4. That was what, last year, year before, 1. He didn't get no 110 years. I mean, it's appalling to me. I'm going to be honest. Dude, it just, man, it irks me. I'm not got no lie to tell, because I know personally the system failed this kid. And yes. I feel 100% correct. They ought to lock that owner up with him, whoever trained him, whoever give his CDL, the regional DOT over that trucking company. They all should be locked up right in a jail cell with him, and even up to the FMCSA. They should be held accountable, because there's too many American citizens and brothers and sisters of this highway that's dying right now today, and they will be tomorrow, 1.5 die per day now, because of idiotic no reason regulations and got people out here pushing.
It's
and
actually
being
up
pushed.
To
let's even go.
It's actually up
let's
to 2.4 a day, Greg. 2.4 a day. It
okay,
was at 1.5 before the ELD.
Yeah.
Before the
okay,
ELD, but
look.
After the ELD, it went up to 2.4.
And let's look at all this right here too. Let's look at these coercions of these dispatchers pushing these young kids because they don't know no better. Tell them, well, it's got to be there. If you can't get it there, then you might lose your job. There's several factors that the American citizen, the regular citizen, don't know involved in this trucking industry that cause these things like that to happen. You don't know what stress level it is out here on the highway for young kids, and even us older ones that's done it, it's a stressful environment. You're dealing with traffic. There's more traffic now than ever, and more regulations that make you drive faster. You know,
that's right.
That ELD is a stone cold killer. And everybody says, well, the ELD
absolutely
don't kill nobody. It's the man behind the wheel. But I'm going to tell you this. If that thing wasn't staring him in the face, I bet you he'd ride down that highway listening to his radio, and he wouldn't be so stressed out and aggravated and worried about getting some from point A to point B on time.
You know what, Greg? You bring up a good point with the ELD staring you in the face. When this ELD was first mandated, and I was a good little citizen, and I got this put in my truck, that staring me in the face right now as I'm looking at you. I'm off duty. But you know what? You know, when I got this first in my truck, I used to run my paper logs, and if I was tired, I'd stop and nap for 2-3 hours and write it in later. Everything was safe. But the first year that this thing was in my truck, the first year, I followed it to a T. I drove when I shouldn't have been driving. At times, I was on the phone with friends of mine that said, dude, just pull over. Don't worry about the load. Don't worry. The thing that people don't realize is I pull over and I don't finish the load I'm under, I get fined. And I don't make no money.
Exactly.
They force me into driving in unsafe conditions, weather conditions, traffic, numerous things where before people are like, well, you just admitted you cheated. No, I'm not admitting that I'm cheating. I'm admitting that I use common sense, something that is not so common anymore in this country is common sense.
Exactly.
And I'm really honestly tired of it. And I want to share a story with you that just happened, absolutely just happened last night. I was at the Flying J in Joplin, Missouri. I was in there. I had to get reefer fuel and skip the details. A guy says, hey, do you know if it's supposed to get worse out tonight because there's some bad weather moving in? And I said, yeah, there's some bad weather moving in, but I said, where are you headed? He goes, I'm going an hour south. I said, I'm going to guess you're going to Fayetteville, Arkansas, to Walmart. He goes, I am. He goes, because he said he pulled for creek. And he said, well, I told my dispatch that I'm stopping because the wind's too strong and it's blowing me all over the road and I don't feel comfortable. And I said, well, you'll be fine if you go ahead that way. I just came up from Fayetteville and just, like, literally just got here, and I did 70 miles an hour the whole way. I said, yeah, is the wind strong? Absolutely. It blows you around a little bit. You just got to adjust to it. I said, but, you know, just slow it down a little bit and head that way. He was like, the look in his eye was pure terror and nervous. And I said, yeah. You know what, bud? I said, here's the bottom line. If you don't feel comfortable driving in it, park that truck, call your dispatch and tell them that you're not leaving it or you're not leaving with that load because you don't feel comfortable driving in those conditions. You know what? When I was 25 years old and I first got into this industry and I didn't feel comfortable, I went anyway because my dispatcher told me to. But after all the years of experience that I've got under my belt, I've learned there's one thing. Nobody tells me when and how to drive my truck. If I don't feel safe,
exactly,
the wheels don't move. So that's what I told that kid.
Something else you just struck on right there, years of experience in this industry, and also now you're an owner-operator. That changes the game a little bit, you know. You know what you face, and you can manage it. But the guys that are company drivers, they don't have that option. They got someone that owns that truck, and they got driver managers, the megas do, that guy there does, and a dispatcher pushing him because they want that load there where they can get that load paid that as soon as he delivers it.
That's right. But I got another call I'm going to grab on, Greg, and I appreciate your input on this because It's a touchy situation, and I'm sure we're going to have some conversations about this in the upcoming weeks about whether or not that maybe we need to get a group of us go down there and go right to the governor's mansion or the Capitol with a bunch of trucks and demand a little bit of a reduction in that sentence, because that if we don't do stand up for this, ladies and gentlemen, this trucking industry, you get in an accident, whether it's your fault or not, and they find one little thing mechanically wrong with you or your truck, whether you knew about it or not, you're going to jail for a very long time, and they're going to throw you in there, throw the key away, and smile at you while they do it. And we cannot sit back and let that happen. And I'm not saying that the judge, we should go against the justice system, that he doesn't deserve jail time, because he does, because he was negligent in some sense, but there's other people that should be charged in this also. This guy should not take the fall for an incompetent government. So, but exactly. I want to get to this other caller, Greg, and I will, I'll talk to you later, my brother.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. Good night, y'all.
All right, see ya. All right, that was Greg Anderson, everybody. He's an owner-operator. He's has his own company, a good friend of ours. So I want to get over to Brian over here. Brian's been waiting patiently for us, and I want to let him add in his two cents. And before I get to Brian, I want to just say, if you are on the phone, you want to join in the conversation and share your opinion, the phone number is 516-387-1733. When you get through, just press the number 1. That'll give us a heads up that you want to be come on air and share your opinion. So, Brian, I'm going to bring you on the air right now, and I would love to hear what you want to bring to this conversation. Brian?
Yeah, two things. Real quick, one, the previous caller, he mentioned the fact that you have in your mind what you're going to do if you're in a situation like that. I mean, I kind of feel the same way he does. I don't have as much experience in this industry as he does, but I've got a decade plus, and yeah, I know what I would do if I was in his situation, or I think I know what I would do. Almost 10 years ago, my first real go at it, I was coming down Siskiyou Pass going into Oregon. I don't know if anybody knows where that is or such, just up there at I-5. And I had my transmission just jumped out of gear. It just jumped clean out of gear. That is probably one of the steepest grades I can honestly think of. And it grabs you. You don't know what you're going to do until you're in a situation like that. Now, obviously, I was able to get control and get everything back to where it needed to be. But, you know, before we judge this kid too harshly, I think we ought to all sit back and, I mean, seriously think about it. Have you been in that situation? And unless you have, or you've been in a close one like it, I think you really got to temper what you're saying, if that makes any sense. Along with that, though, I don't think that changing the ELDs and such is going to do enough. I mean, think about this. That kid probably is running for, what, maybe 40 cents a mile? Like, you get rid of the ELDs, you're still going to have the guys that are going to have to run like hell just to make money. So we got to change quite a bit about the industry if we're going to actually make it safer, one of which is going to have to be pay, how we structure pay. Just a thought.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Just the simple fact, if we took the ELDs back out of the trucks, went back to paper, is it going to change everything? No. It's going to help the experienced drivers doing what they do, what they're experienced at. They're professional drivers. What we need to think about, or not think about, but what we need to do is completely overhaul the training system. The training standards in this country and or this industry are they fail with a capital F times 10. It's absolutely horrible. And any of you that are listening that aren't truckers and you drive the roads every day and you have your family on the roads, including the government, the FMCSA, the DOT, all of you, you need to hear something from a professional truck driver. If you're on the road with these semi drivers that are out here currently now, you should be scared to death. Because they have not been properly trained. I watch it every day. So, but Brian, I appreciate your call, and we're going to move on. And thank you so much again for listening.
Yeah, appreciate it.
All right, everybody, that was Brian. And I got a couple more on here that want to add their 2 cents on this. And I guess we're going to spend a little bit more time on this subject tonight than I thought, and that's okay. We can get to the Gary Webb story next week if we have to. I can extend the show just a little bit tonight, too, if we have time. So, but let me get to the caller, 4331. Your last four digits are 4331. I'm going to bring you on the air right now, and you can let me know what's on your mind. 4331,
well,
who do we got on
here? Evening, Howard. Your steak buying buddy.
Hey, if it ain't Lee Schmidt.
How
you doing, brother?
Before I get started, any of you listening that run I-70 out of Colorado into Utah, exit 37, there is a steakhouse 50 feet from the truck stop. Phenomenal. We just left there. So...
Look at that. The guy comes on my radio show and starts giving plugs.
Oh, it was phenomenal. I haven't had a steak like that in I don't know how long. Really good food.
Since the last time you bought me mine. I tell you what, the last time you bought me mine was at the Texas Roadhouse in Joplin, Missouri. I was broke down there for, I don't know, about a week or so. And Lee and his wife Lisa stopped, and they had truck parking at the hotel I was staying at. We walked across the street, and Lee bought me a Texas Roadhouse steak. And I'm going to tell you, everybody, my audience, that was the best steak I've ever had, 90% because I didn't have to pay for it. And the other 10% is because, well, it was Texas Roadhouse, and it was absolutely spectacular. They always have good food there.
And this actually
But go ahead,
that.
Lee. What do you got to add to this conversation tonight?
I think that the company should be at fault, the FMCSA should be at fault, the driver should be at fault. I've been out here over 30 years, and I have run 70, and I've had close calls where it's oh shit moments where you forget where you're at. The first thing any driver that's been doing this a long time knows, no matter what, you take out yourself. Now, Lisa's been arguing with people left and right. The guy is going so fast. Well, you weren't in that situation. Doesn't matter. I'm not going to kill somebody else. I'll kill myself. If you miss the ramp, you kill yourself. That comes with the job. The responsibility of driving 80,000 pounds, 100,000, 120, 200,000 pounds down the road is the responsibility to protect everybody else. If you're not going to protect them, you kill yourself. That comes with the job.
But me and you know that, and Lisa knows that, and all of us experienced guys know that. But I put yourself back in the shoes of a 23-year-old when you first got out here. Did we know it then?
I sure
the hell didn't. I know that.
No. But now the other thing a lot of drivers don't know is they think that, oh, my God, I'm can't pull in these things. I can't make it. I'm going to be fine. The truck's going to be totaled. Yep. Truck's going to be totaled. Yep, you might get fined. Some states might fine you. But you're going to walk away. 99.9% of the time, you will walk away. They're made to take trucks at any speed. That's why they're there. They're tested. So I think where the government is failing, they need to start letting people know, use these. You know, there's signs in Idaho when you're running down back roads in Idaho through Hell's Canyon. There's 4 signs before you even start coming down. Drivers, use escape ramp. You will not be fined. They need to do that. It's the DOT's problem to let drivers know. Yes.
Since I got you on the phone, explain to the audience, because you're very well versed in the FMCSA Green Book, and but before you get to the regulations that state that you have to speak fluent English, tell the audience what exactly is an emergency exit ramp on a mountain. What does that consist of?
It consists of, I want to say it's 1.5 inches sewer stone placed on top of other sewer stone and on top of more sewer stone, basically. And then sand underneath, but every state is different. But it's supposed to be a material that the minute you get in it, it sucks the truck down. It's the way they're designed. The weight of the
right.
truck is going to go in, and we'll say you get in about 75 feet, and after that, it's a different type of material underneath, and it sucks the truck down. It doesn't stay together. When you walk on it, you'd sink. It's designed to roll away and let the truck sink, and your frame and, I mean, your axles would actually start digging in. So, yeah, you're going to wreck your truck, but you're going to stop. You're going to walk away. That is what they're designed to do. Now, I've seen some really bad designs of ones that have cables and, like, K-rail. And it's supposed to slow you down when you hit this cable and springs attached to it. And I've seen them. I've never seen them work. And the more I look at them, the more I think that that cable and K-rail and everything is going to cut the truck in half. So I would actually be afraid to use that.
Yeah, the old-fashioned emergency off-ramps, I think were designed pretty well. And, yeah, I think they're pretty good. But let's move on to the FMCSA Green Book. That's the if those of you that are listening, that is a regulations book put onto the truck drivers, trucking industry through the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, the FMCSA. And Lee is very well versed in the FMCSA, way more than I'll ever be. Speak about, if you wouldn't mind, Lee, what does it say about speaking fluent English in order to obtain your CDL?
All right. It is under 391.11. Requires that in order to get a commercial driver's license, an applicant must be able to read and speak the English language sufficiently to converse with the general public, to understand highway traffic signs and signals in the English language. That is the statute. Again, it's 391.11. It's never been off the books. FMCSA petitioned CBSA, which is a group that enforces regulations and makes up their own as they go, to stop enforcing the out-of-service criteria for not being able to speak English. Because if they did, a lot of drivers would be placed out of service.
Exactly.
When you get your,
and I'm going to tell
when
you
get your CD, go ahead.
There is up in Minnesota. I had a friend that got pulled into a weigh station as he was getting his papers looked at. A truck comes by with a headlight literally hanging out of the socket. The truck looked like it was on its last leg. I mean, it had duct tape, black tape, scotch tape, tapeworms. I mean, it had everything. And my friend said to him, well, why didn't you pull that truck in for an inspection? And he said, because it's Somali and he doesn't speak English. And we don't understand
yeah.
each other. That there, right there,
yeah.
right there. Now, again, I have no problem with anybody coming here on a work visa or anything. Even if you come over here as an immigrant and you're working to get your citizenship, great. All I ask for, and a lot of us ask for, is if you're going to do this job, do it safe, because we respect this job, we respect this profession, we respect the road. This is our life. We have sacrificed everything in our life, a normal life that all of you take for granted, where you're home every night with the kids and you get to have supper at the table and you get to watch Friends and watch the 9 o'clock news or whatever you do. We don't do that, and that's fine. We've accepted that, and we're okay with that. But when we watch and our industry that we love get trampled on by bureaucrats and government agencies that could give two shits less about your safety but want to keep on regulating us in the name of safety, we get a little irritated. And what I'm getting at right now is when I asked Lee to explain that to the audience is because that is proof that this guy should not probably have been issued his CDL because he did not speak fluent enough English. Now,
in his defense, and he was from Texas, okay? Texas
right.
does not require you to be able to speak proficient English. That's Texas law. But the problem was
just for Texas,
state
though.
Line. Correct.
Exactly. That's just for Texas. So
now,
what I'm saying
when you get your CDL,
here, guys, is that when you have a federal law on the books, I don't care. I get each state has a different law, but there has to be more of a universal law for all 48 constituent states. This and when I say he should not have had a CDL, I'm not putting the blame on him because he was just trying to go out and live the American dream. I'm putting the blame on the FMCSA, the DOT, and the Texas DOT specifically, and the company that hired him that sent him out of state, knowing full well that he was not capable of reading English. So I apologize for interrupting you. So I just wanted to make my point quickly before you continue.
I was just going to say that according to the new, the rules now, you don't have to speak English to do the written part of the CDL test now. You can have an interpreter for that. But you must be able to speak and understand English to take the written test.
No, the other way around.
The other way around? No.
Driving test is not allowed.
Yeah, the driving does not allow. What did I say? I said written test. Sorry. Driving test. The driving needs to be English. The written can be interpreter.
Translator. And for the audience, the person you're hearing in the background, that is Lee's CEO and manager, Lisa.
Yes. Yes. There was something.
They're
else
great
I
people.
To say. The company should be held liable. Oh, speaking of sending guys out, don't know where they're going. My son's company's in southern Wisconsin. Long story short, they said they're sending a guy out to California next week. Wanted to know what the chain laws were. And after I told him, I said, has he ever gone out in the mountains before? No, he hasn't. I said, well, I'll give you a short crash course. Whatever the speed limit says, do it. And less. If it says drivers in a semi, no faster than 45, you go down to 35. I says, don't be afraid to use an off-ramp, a runaway ramp, whatever. I said, but whatever it says, go less. If he's never been out here, he's got no experience, you go less. So,
yeah. No, Lee, and I appreciate you calling in and putting your thoughts in on this because, I respect your opinion and your knowledge on the green book of the FMCSA Bible and but I got another caller I want to bring on here and thanks for calling
in. Have a good night.
And remember, you and Lisa have a great night.
My opinion. You too. Bye bye.
No, it's just Lisa's. We know that. That was Lee Schmidt, everybody. Good friends of the shows, and I'm bringing Tony on right now. And Tony, what do you got to add to this conversation?
Well, I was thinking about this today. With all these nuclear verdicts and now this nuclear sentence, in my opinion, the risk isn't worth the reward out here anymore. And if drivers would stop driving in inclement weather, it's going to hurt us in the pocketbook. But maybe when Johnny Public doesn't get his toilet paper on Tuesday because there's a snowstorm on Saturday, maybe they'll start looking at why we're not willing to drive in this shit anymore. You know, I'll tell you, I'm to the point right now after this, if a snowflake hits my window, I'm parking my truck. They can kiss my ass. They'll get their shit when I get it there. You know, this is ridiculous.
Yeah. Me and you have had that conversation on the phone many a times or, you know, we've called our dispatch and you know, back in the day when I first started driving, the first 4, 5, 6 years of driving, I pulled, for the first 8 years, I pulled bull rack. For those of you in the audience, what that is a cattle truck. I pulled live cattle to and from farms to the kill plant. And I would drive in stuff that no human being should ever drive in. And I would continue on because I was told, you just get that load of cattle there. Now I pull a reefer unit, and it's refrigerated, it's temperature controlled, and when the weather gets bad, even before, but I don't know, maybe the last 3 or 4 years, I would continue on. I'd slow down a little bit. Before the ELD, I'd just slow down a little bit, and I'd write into my logs, you know, later that I didn't have to slow down, that I got here at a certain time and everything was fine, and I use common sense, basically. But now, with the ELDs, it records everything that you do as far as time-wise. It's not worth it to me to drive 25 or 30 miles an hour for 8 hours when I could just stop, go to bed, get some rest, get up in the morning, or get up in 8 or 10 hours and go and drive double that speed or faster because the roads are cleared off. Not to mention the poor training that's going on in this country right now with the truck drivers. I'm scared to death to be on the road in snowy and icy conditions with these ELDs in the truck because everybody's racing that clock. They're not slowing down, and they're following too close. And if you all haven't noticed, the last 3 winters in a row, Wyoming, Iowa, all over the country where it's snowy or snowy conditions, icy conditions, Michigan, there has been nothing but pileup after pileup. Pennsylvania, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 car pileups involving cars, trucks. Everybody's driving too fast. I watch it every winter as I'm going down the interstate where the speed limit's 70 and I'm doing 45 because I know that the road conditions are not good. And these trucks pass me doing 70 because their ELD and their dispatcher says, get that load there or else it's dangerous out here in the wintertime. And if it's snowy or icy, I highly recommend or highly suggest that you get the hell off the roads because it's a death trap. That is just my opinion. But what did you think, Tony, of that sentencing guideline between the gentleman out in Colorado got 110 years and the illegal immigrant in Cottonwood, Minnesota, that killed 4 children, got 12 and a half, and walked after 8 years? What did you think of that?
Well, it's ridiculous, and that's the thing. The verdicts and everything that's getting handed down on the trucking industry and the truckers is ridiculous. And, you know, you might be a hero to your company, anybody that's out driving, you might be a hero to your company because you got to load through in shitty weather today. You fuck something up. And you go to prison, they're not going to remember your name in a week. They'll put somebody else in that truck if the truck still exists. They are not going to send you money for your commissary. They're not going to do nothing for you. They won't even remember your name. And it's all companies. It doesn't matter. I drive for a great company, but I know if something happens and I go to prison for it, they won't remember my name in a week, you know. And
right.
It falls on us. And until this is ridiculous, $90 million for an accident, $411 million in another one that I heard about recently, and 110 years because you had an accident, they can kiss my ass. I'm not driving in this shit anymore. You know,
yeah.
I'm not taking that chance. I'm not willing to take that chance.
Right, and we both know that the winter, you know, this was different. This situation in Colorado was not winter conditions. However, the implications it has on this industry is this will flood right into the winter conditions. And
there was that driver in North Dakota.
If I get wrapped up into a wreck in the winter now, they're going to come at the truck driver. And Tony was just hitting on it, and I'm going to let Tony explain this story because Tony knows this story. I do too. But Tony, tell them the story about the guy in North Dakota.
There was a driver in North Dakota that traveled not advised. A lady's kids were home from school because all the schools are closed, and she decided to take them somewhere. Lost control of her vehicle, went through the median, hit the semi head-on. I can't remember if one or two of her children got killed, but they got
$90 million.
Yeah, they got $90 million out of that trucking company.
And you know what their excuse was? They said the truck shouldn't have been there. That's how they found him guilty. The truck shouldn't have been there in those conditions. While, in all fairness, why was she there? Yeah,
exactly.
She was at home with her children, decided to take them to a movie. In implement or bad weather, I want to say increment, but
yeah.
Bad weather. And she decided to take her kids to a movie, loses control, and through the investigation, they found that her rear tires on her SUV were borderline legal, which means they were almost bald, which is why she lost control of her vehicle. So, but yeah, they blamed the truck driver on that. He didn't get charged. There was no tickets issued at the accident or after the accident, but the company had to pay $90 million out. And listen, they lost their children regardless. This is another case where I send my deepest condolences. But you know what? Take accountability and take responsibility for your own actions. You shouldn't have been out in that weather either. Is it your fault? No. You were just trying to bring your kids to a movie. You thought a snow day, you're going to have fun. It's not your fault either. But it's certainly not the truck driver's fault either. So instead of trying to, you know, get these huge settlements over bad decisions, just take responsibility for your actions and be responsible and don't go out on the roads when it's nasty out. So,
for reward. It's getting to the point where, like I said, snowflake hits my window, I'll park. You know, Johnny Public can get his toilet paper the next day, you know.
Yeah, the same here. I'm throwing my beer out the window and I'm saying enough of this. I'm not driving another mile.
All right,
Tony. I appreciate the call, brother.
Talk to you later. Yep. Thanks.
Yep, see ya.
Bye.
All right. And that was Tony. He's a good friend of the show's also. We got a lot of you guys on the phone tonight, and I appreciate that. It's always good to hear different voices and different opinions and different takes on it. I know that we share differing opinions on a lot of different things, and that's okay, but we can still get along and respect each other and have a discussion. If you're listening, 516-387-1733, 516-387-1733. When you get through, make sure you press the number 1 on your phone. That way I know that you want to get on here through our switchboard. If you don't press the number 1, I just think you're calling in to listen to the show. And I see that one of you pressed the number 1 right away. So I'm going to get right to you. Medicine Man, I'm going to bring you on the air right now. Medicine Man, what do you got to add to this?
How are we doing, guys?
Good.
Living the dream.
Yep. Yeah, living the dream. Now, I'm going to poke a little bit at this one first. When it comes to the FMCSA, the training, so on and so forth, think about it. They've got throwaway drivers. Throwaway drivers. When I make that statement, I'm going to talk about the man that just has been sentenced to, 110 years? Throwaway drivers. Don't have to read, write, learn, or know any form of the English language. Can bring them right through, train them up in 3 weeks, and they're in a truck, and who cares if they kill 4 people going down a mountain pass? Toss
okay.
them in prison for 110 years. Who cares? What's the big deal? There's 30
system.
More right behind them. There's
yeah, if that would have
right
been
down.
Me,
there's 30,
Medicine 40, Man,
thousand right behind
Medicine
them.
Man, if that would have been me, Mr. Jeremy Johnson, the disrespected trucker,
yep.
and I would have made that mistake, which I wouldn't have made that mistake now because I have the experience and I would have known better. But let's
you
just
have the
say
experience
I did
for it, yes.
for conversation's yeah. sake. Do you think that they would have thrown me in prison for 110 years?
Quite possibly.
I don't think they would.
Maybe. Don't know. Well, probably not with
yeah.
the experience. Well, I don't know. I don't know. Who knows? Who's to say now? I mean, honestly.
Yeah. I
it's
don't
a
know
throwaway
either,
company. I mean, you look at the big box companies, they get paid by the federal government right now just to toss drivers in trucks, whether they know what color they are or what gender they are. They're tossed in a truck to run around with 80,000 pounds, right?
Yep.
They don't care. They are paid by the federal government to shove any Tom, Dick, and Harry in a truck to drive it. That needs fixed immediately. First time that I ran over top of that pass, the Eisenhower, I actually went across with a PC, I believe, 2200 Volvo. I've done it once, and I don't think I'll do it again. I was Bruce Weight at, I think, 97,000 pounds, 10.5 feet wide, up one side, down the other. I was actually headed, if I remember right, I was going to Grand Junction, Colorado, on the other side of Colorado, east to west. They shut down the tunnel for me. It took me all of 5 hours to go up that and down the other side. I have experience, so yes, I didn't crash, I didn't burn, I didn't, you know, roll through a whole pile of cars down at the bottom side. But the fact these companies are just employing anything that they can find with a pulse is repulsive. It's disgusting.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. No,
the problem is there's little money in real safety. And that's why we see it.
Why do you need safety when you get in, you know, you got the government bailout, number one, when they hire them. Government bailout, number two, when they insure the claim. That poor boy just got railroaded. That's a damn shame. Me and Brian actually talked about that here a couple of days ago, and I thought about it. And it's, you know, he does deserve jail time, in my opinion. But for 110 years, he shouldn't have been out there.
No.
Common sense. The common sense factor at that point in time. Do you feel comfortable
doing
this?
I hope the families. Listen, the families are going to, they're going to file civil suit against this guy. In which case, I mean, obviously he doesn't have a pot to piss in. He's 23 years old. He's just getting his career going. Wasn't properly trained. I suggest that these families go after the FMCSA, the DOT, specifically the Texas DOT, the Driver's License Bureau down in Texas, wherever he obtained his CDL, and go after that guy that owned that trucking company, which you ain't going to get nothing out of him either. But
you're not
go
going
after the government after
this one.
It'd
be a good start.
Mm-hmm.
That falls on
if you want to set a precedent, set a precedent as going after the people that are at the start of this that are responsible. Because this kid, I do not feel with my heart that he was completely responsible for this mess. I just don't feel
not.
It. The people... No, the people that
at
are responsible 23
years
for
old, would
are the
you
people that
would have gone
failed
down
it.
Through that mountain pass. You would have done it. 23 years old, you would have cruised down through there, but you had the common sense to stop knowing that maybe this isn't right. He didn't have any understanding of what that was. That's not a pass you mess around with, period. I don't care what you say. The rocks are no joke. It's 50 miles up and it's 50 miles down, and it's anywhere between 6 to 8% up and down.
I just got off the phone with my mom the other night, and I told her an old guy stopped me the first time I went down 70. I went down that pass, and I got pulled into that scale. That's about, I don't know, right before you get down to Denver, right, on would be the eastbound side. I pulled into that scale.
Okay.
It was open, and my brakes were smoking a little bit. And he pulled over the scale, and he said, pull around, pull off to the side. So I pulled off to the side, and I walked in there, and I said, what's the problem? I was new. I was new to truck driving. And first time I've ever been down that mountain. First time ever. And I rode my brakes halfway down, thank God. But no, dude, it's scary as shit. But and they got signs all over also. It says no Jake brakes, no engine brakes. I'm thinking, well, Jesus, how the hell am I supposed to slow down if you got to use your brakes? And for the audience, an
you
engine
take the
brake
mentality of your sign's wrong at that point in time.
Yeah. So okay. So I get pulled in this scale, and the DOT officer says your brakes are smoking. I got to sit you for a while. And I was naive to it. I didn't know. I was new to the industry. I said, well, how long do I got to sit? A couple minutes or? And he looked at me. And he laughed. He goes, how long you been driving? I said, I don't know, about 6 months. I said, this is my first time out here. And he just looked at me, and there's an old guy standing there showing us paperwork. And he said, son, let me tell you something. You're white as a ghost. I said, yeah. I've never been down the mountains before in a truck. And he said, I'm going to tell you my secret. He said, you can never go down a mountain too slow, but you can go down a mountain too fast just once. And I didn't know what the hell.
Time,
I looked
right?
at him like, I looked at him like he was a crazy old man. And it didn't ring in my head. It didn't resonate until after I'd been driving truck for 5, 6, 7, 8 years, and I got it. One day I was going down a mountain, had my Jake brake on, maintaining a 35-mile-an-hour speed, and I'm like, no brakes.
Got it.
Perfect.
Ding, ding, ding.
I got it.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner. That's
but,
it.
Hey, Medicine Man, thanks for calling in, brother. I want to get to something else before we end the show tonight, and thanks for sharing your opinion.
All right. You guys have a good evening.
You too, brother.
All right. Take care.
All right, guys. That was Medicine Man. Medicine Man and Brian, friends of the show also, very loyal listeners, and we appreciate those guys sharing their opinion and their thoughts. And we've spent a pretty good hour and a half on that subject, which, you know what, if it turns into that, it turns into that. And maybe that's what needed to be spent on that subject. I wanted to we're not going to get to the Gary Webb tonight. Because I want to dedicate a little bit of time to that. But I do want to get into a couple other things that are a little off subject from the trucking industry, which is kind of what we do here. We're all over the place, you know. One day we'll talk about pink slippers, and the next day we'll talk about donuts, and then the next day we'll talk about trying to silence us. and that's what I'm going to talk about tonight is censorship, social media censorship in general, and what has happened to me personally. I'm a little pissed off about it, and a lot of people that know me have wondered why I've been so. I've even gotten messages. I'm sorry you're so angry. What they don't understand is the censorship that I've gone through personally on my social media accounts that a normal person doesn't have to go through. And they said, well, just shut up then. No. I will not comply. I will not just shut up. I will not just bend over for you because it makes you uncomfortable what I talk about. I was on TikTok, as you all know. I got banned off of there permanently. And they said it for bullying. I never bullied anybody. I just spread the stories that I found through digging and my research. Now let's fast forward to Facebook. Facebook just put another limitation on me, or whatever you want to call it, where my posts go to the bottom of the news feed for at least 90 days, and they fact check me, right? They quote unquote fact check me. Well, recently, Facebook was in federal court because they were in a lawsuit with John Stossel, and they admitted, their lawyers admitted in court, that their Facebook fact checkers are, in fact, just opinion. So fast forward to yesterday or the day before, I shared a video from a nurse in the Army or a healthcare worker near, what was she, Chris? Do you remember?
She was a doctor, a lieutenant colonel, and she is an actual medical doctor for the Army.
There we go. Yeah. So a lieutenant colonel, doctor in the military, under oath in an actual, I believe it was a deposition or a hearing, and I shared the video out. In that video, she was talking about the VAERS website that is directly connected to the CDC. That reports adverse side effects to vaccines. And because I shared that video, I didn't put my opinion on it. I didn't put anything on. I just shared the video. Facebook fact checkers come. Then since I'd shared that video on three separate platforms, it gave me three separate violations. And they said that VAERS website is not a solid. It doesn't hold solid evidence of vaccine side effects or deaths. It's just a starting point for investigations for the CDC. So what I've noticed with Facebook is they come up with these bullshit fact checks, not just on me, but people of my way of thinking, mainly conservatives. I don't consider myself a conservative. However, I definitely am not a Democrat. I'm more of a libertarian. You do you, I'll do me. You, whatever you make for your paycheck, you bring home to your family, and whatever I make for my paycheck, I'll bring home to my family. I don't feel like I should have to give you my money because you didn't make as much as I did. I was in your shoes once where I didn't make as much money, and I, through luck, whatever you want to call it, I got to different positions in my life through hard work. I worked my ass off. So the point I'm trying to make is Facebook, well, just like TikTok, they're on to me. They always have been for a very long time because I speak my mind and I speak out and I share the things I come across. And a lot of the things I come across, big tech and the government do not want out there. And they will silence you at all costs. So what they do is they throw this fake fact check on you. And they, yeah, do they show your stuff? Yep. But they show it to a limited audience. And what they do with me, I have the Disrespected Trucker on Facebook. That's got over 22,000 members. I have a really good following on Facebook, Twitter, different social media apps, YouTube. And I'm going to focus on the Disrespected Trucker on Facebook because it has 22,000 members. Whenever I personally post something on the Disrespected Trucker, I get an audience out or an audience reach, a post reach of anywhere between 30 and 70 people out of 22,000. So they kind of shoot themselves in the foot because they admit that my post outreach isn't, or my post reach isn't very good. And there's statistically no possible way that when I post on a group with 22,000 members, in which case anywhere between 12 and 17,000 members are active, that my post reach is only 60 or 70 or 80. So now I figured it out a long time ago that they're censoring me. And they're censoring me by coming up with these bullshit fact checks from fly-by-night organizations. And honestly, they're leftist-leaning communists. I'll just put it that way.
Marxist.
So,
Marxist,
yeah,
organizations.
Yeah. They want it their way.
Marxist.
They want you to. Yeah, they don't want to. They don't want to have a conversation with you. They want you to agree with them. And anybody that knows me, I'll agree with you if I believe in it, but if I don't, I'm going to ask you questions. And if you can't answer my questions, then I'm not going to believe in you. So there. I don't know. Have you had that problem, Chris, or is it just me?
Oh, no, I've had that problem. Anybody who posts information that goes against Marxist ideology at this point, ideology, is having that problem. And here's the thing, folks. You know, this isn't just about grumbling because things that we post aren't getting shared out to as many people as we'd like. This is a very dangerous game they are playing. And like the video that you, which I watched, listened to, like he said, he didn't throw any opinion in there. This was literally a medical doctor of 30 years experience, a lieutenant colonel in the Army who I believe she holds a position as chief something within the department that she's in. Regardless, this is a well-experienced medical professional, and this was her testimony. That's all this video was. It did not give any narration, anything along those lines. It was just a video clip of a medical professional of 30 years testifying, giving their expert medical opinion on whether or not she felt the vaccination policy of the United States Army was acceptable, whether it was a good risk management move. And there was a lot of points that she brought up and talked about. It wasn't just her citing the bear numbers. My first question is, number one, how are you going to rate that false information? It's a video clip of testimony with no additional content. So what? It's false? She didn't actually testify? No. Instead, what's happening, they don't like what she had to say. They don't like her testimony. So that gets into a couple different things. Number one, apparently we're only allowed to hear witness testimony that Facebook agrees with. Takeaway from this whole thing is that a bunch of people who are absolutely positively not qualified in any way, shape, or means to render a professional medical opinion, and I'm talking about the factless checkers, they are deciding what medical advice you are allowed to hear. They're literally, they are deciding which medical expert they think is right. Again, based on their journalism degree from a liberal arts school in Southern California or wherever the hell they went to school, you know, maybe it's based upon their years of being a barista at Starbucks. Okay, I'm generalizing here. I know I shouldn't do that, but I can't contain myself at times. The bottom line is these people, these big tech companies, this is basically a public utility at this point. This is where people get a lot of information now, and they go to these sources, and these big tech companies control the flow of most of the information you're seeing and hearing. They are deciding what you are allowed to hear. And that includes blocking you from hearing medical advice they don't like. That's a dangerous game. They have no business doing that whatsoever.
How many people do you think they've killed by having that attitude?
Well, you know, I mean, there's a number to that. We don't know what that number is, but the bottom line is this. There are adverse reactions. There are fatal adverse reactions. There is with all vaccines. There's fatal reactions, not just to all pharmaceuticals for some people. The problem is they don't have the data yet. This hasn't been around long enough. They haven't put together the puzzle pieces and figured out. They haven't figured out what people are having fatal reactions and why.
It's so funny, though, that you say that, Chris, because they just came out with a story tonight that the government recommends, or the FDA or the whatever, maybe it was the CDC, I can't remember who, but they recommend that you take the Moderna, what's the other one, Johnson & Johnson, and what's the other one? Pfizer.
You
either take the Pfizer or the Moderna shot. They recommend that over the Johnson & Johnson, because Johnson & Johnson now, they're saying there's they're admitting to nine cases, and they say rare cases of blood clot issues. And when I say rare cases, that's what they admit to. I'm going to tell you right now, me and many like me have done hours and hours of research. This is not a rare thing with Johnson & Johnson. And what pisses me off about this, Chris, is that my daughter went and got vaccinated, and she was too scared to tell me because she knows what my stance is on it. However, I've always told both of my kids, you are adults. My daughter's 18. My son's 21. You make the best decision for your health that you want to make. All I'm going to do is tell you the facts. Even though their mother is in the healthcare field, a very smart woman. She's like, I can't even, she's very smart. She's gotten vaccinated also, which, but hey, more power to them. But what pisses me off about this is that now they're admitting that Johnson & Johnson causes blood clots when we knew it all the whole time. And not to mention the cases of myocarditis. Yeah, dude, we've known about this for a year and a half, and now they're finally – and this is what they do. They slowly admit to things in small numbers, and then they always put the word rare in front of it. And it literally just – why can't people just really read between the lines here and understand – what the government and the CDC and the FDA do. I came across a story with Dr. Fauci. Dr. Fauci, who's been at the NIH for, what is it, the NIHC or whatever the hell it is, Institute for Health or whatever, and the NIH.
AIED, I think.
Whatever the hell it's called. He's been there for a year. Anyway, back in the 80s, in the AIDS epidemic, there was a drug called Bactrin. And Bactrin was used to treat people that got pneumonia after they had the immune deficiency disorder syndrome. And there was thousands of them that developed, what did I just say? My head's spinning. Oh. Pneumonia. They developed pneumonia, and Dr. Fauci blocked the use of Bactrin because he was convinced he was going to find a vaccine for the AIDS virus. That was back in the 80s. Now, fast forward 30 years, ladies and gentlemen. He's blocking the use of hydroxychloroquine, which was approved in China as a viable treatment for COVID-19. He's now blocking it in America because he's convinced he will find a vaccine for what? COVID-19. And now they have thrown this vaccine out there that had 2 months of testing in mass numbers for what they call an mRNA technology, which is a gene therapy. Oh, my God, it just drives me nuts. It is... The mRNA is a gene therapy, an experimental gene therapy, and these vaccines, they're marketing them as vaccines, which they're not vaccines. They've admitted all of this, but the mainstream media is not, they're not talking about it. And once I just got a message, remember, Chris, I told you about that lady I wanted to have on the show. From New Jersey. I'm sorry to interrupt, guys. Chris, what is that? What is our guest call-in number? Would you please? Oh, you're doing it right now. Never mind.
Yeah. 5.
Yep, I got you.
387. Okay. Yeah, 1733. Yeah, I just sent the number out to someone.
Yeah, I wanted to get to her because she's got some important things to say too, and. So when she calls in, I will add her on right away. Since we're talking about what we're talking about, the subject matter at hand with Fauci and the COVID-19 and all of this. So she should be calling in any minute. But what my point being, ladies and gentlemen, is that the media paints Dr. Fauci as this expert scientist, doctor / whatever you want to call it.
They hated him in the 80s, by the way.
Oh, how do I say that? You know what? I'm not going to be politically correct. I'm just going to say what it is. The gay people in the 80s protested against Fauci everywhere because he was literally killing the gay population with his refusal to allow Bactrin as a treatment for the AIDS virus. This literally is you can look this up, ladies and gentlemen. And people like, oh, why should I take your word for it? Well, because I look shit up. Maybe. I don't know.
Don't take our word for it.
Look it up for yourself. Everything is hiding in plain sight. If you make the most minimal effort, you can find all kinds of information out there.
Oh, yeah.
From legitimate sources.
Oh, it is true. I suggest, though, that you don't use Google, because Google is censoring things, too. And remember, Google owns YouTube. And you notice how they're censoring things on YouTube also, just like they're doing on Google, just like they're doing on Facebook, just like now they're doing on Twitter. You're not even allowed to talk about certain things on Twitter. I mean, it's like, what the? What, really? What's going on?
Yeah.
Why are they so
Yeah, they won't even allow you to say a piece of verifiable factual information. They will not allow you to discuss the fact that people who have been vaccinated are capable of transmitting the COVID-19 virus to others if they have it. That's a medical fact. You're not allowed to talk about it, though, because they don't like that fact. It's a very inconvenient fact for them and for their agenda. And so if you talk about it, you're banned. That's the new CEO.
So I'm looking at our messenger, Chris, as we're talking here. And the person that I wanted to have call in that messaged us, she has not looked at those messages yet. Now that we have her on Messenger, if she does not get a hold of us before the end of this show, we will set up a time for her to come up on next Thursday show right away. I talked to her briefly on social media, and that's the next thing I wanted to get to, you know, talking about censorship. I go on social media as the Disrespected Trucker Radio Show, and I follow well over 300 different pages. And I just go through them, and I make a comment as the Disrespected Trucker Radio Show. Under NBC is where I get attacked the most. Dakota News Network, Dakota News out of Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Oh, boy, I get nailed there, too. But I'm learning slowly but surely. I just don't respond back 95% of the time. Sometimes they catch my nerve just right, and I respond back. But I'm never mean. I usually try to respond back with facts or links or this or that. Everybody, you need to share your link when you comment. Well, why do I have to? You didn't have to. Well, because you're going against what they're saying. Well, so? Just because you agree with what they're saying, shouldn't you have to share links too? Apparently not. Anyway, so last night I went on to the Lakers, the Los Angeles Lakers basketball team. They showed a video of LeBron James shooting a long three-pointer. Sorry, and I just commented under there in reference to Michael Jordan and numerous other sports figures that used their talent to entertain us through their respective sport. I said, you know, I miss the days when sports figures went out there and entertained us with their talent rather than try to entertain us with their woke opinions. And right away, I had, I don't know, almost 200 people that liked my comment that said, you know, agreed with me. A couple people actually commented and said, yeah, I completely agree. I had one guy get on that said, tell me you're a racist without telling me you're a racist. And then threw another clown, a bunch of clown emojis underneath of it. So since this is our radio show and it's our time, I get to respond to them in my way. cover your kids' ears, folks. Go screw yourself, pal. Just because I disagree with your woke attitude and your woke superstar idol does not mean that I'm a racist. It means I disagree with his political statements, as you disagree with mine, which is fine. I'm okay with that. That's your right and your opinion.
But if you disagree with someone on the left, you must be a horrible person. Therefore, you've got to be a racist or something.
Exactly the point I'm trying to make is what he didn't understand is I was referencing Michael Jordan. I was referencing Bo Jackson, the late, great Demaryius Thomas that just passed away from Denver Broncos, the late, great Kobe Bryant, Magic Johnson. There's Shaquille O'Neal. I could go on and on and on and on and on. And Larry Bird. Oh, wait, I said a white guy. Is that okay? Am I allowed to say a white guy through all that? Or I don't know. Because I certainly don't want to be get yelled at for discriminating because I called one white guy out of a group of six black guys. I mean, you people are absolutely out of your frickin' mind if everything is racist to you. I don't even look like Michael Jordan. Yeah, I know he's a black guy, but I think of Michael Jordan. I don't think of Michael Jordan. Oh, yeah, that black guy that played for the Chicago Bulls. Or Scottie Pippen, the guy that was and Dennis Rodman, the Dream Team. I don't look at them as black guys. I look at them as the Dream Team. I mean, they had the team of the century put together in Chicago. They won multiple championships. And when you tell me that I'm a racist because I go against LeBron James, dude, I'm telling you what. At that point in time, you lost me. I don't give a shit what your opinion is after that. Because
here's the funny thing.
I know now you're the part of the woke crowd. Go ahead, Chris. Weigh in on this.
I mean, this is funny because, I mean, the message that we get from the left, okay? And I just, you know what? Warning, trigger warning, this is going to make some people's heads explode, maybe, I don't know. But the message we get from the left is really pretty clear. We have to start listening to black voices. As long as they agree with the rich white guy that's in charge, and they share our liberal white beliefs. So basically, you know, don't listen to Curtis Jackson, 50 Cent, don't listen to Kanye, you know. Don't listen, you know, to anyone. Don't listen to Candace Owens. You can't listen to her, you know.
She's an Uncle Tom, even though she's black.
You can't listen to Larry Elders. You know, he's the black face of white supremacy because, you know, he says things that us white liberals don't agree with. You know, so we must listen to more black as long as they're falling in line with
Chris,
the wealthy white elite.
Are you gonna leave the Hodge twins out of this?
Oh, I totally forgot about them. Yeah, yeah. There's
a
couple more black white supremacists for you. And don't forget that he's not black, but you know, one of the biggest neo-Nazi white supremacist of all, that Jewish guy, Ben Shapiro, you know. I mean, at every turn, they're saying you absolutely, positively have to fall in line with our beliefs. And I guess if you don't think the way they do, then you're not really black. And so, I mean, it just, it's ridiculous. It's racist.
Let me ask you a question, Chris. Let me ask you a serious question, and the audience, and I'm going to make this short for you to answer, and we're going to go over our time just a little bit tonight because, okay, let me just get to it, and we kind of talked about this before. So Kyle Rittenhouse was a white supremacist, right? The Michigan school shooter, he's a white supremacist. His parents are white supremacists.
Right.
What does it make the black guy who actually had anti-Semitic and it's time to kill the whites on his social media, posted on his social media, that ran over.
Oh, don't forget he also posted Hitler was right.
Yeah, Hitler was right, yep. He ran over innocent people at a parade in Waukesha, Wisconsin, and killed, what, six or seven, injured over 60. What do we call him? Is he... I'm confused because, okay, we got.
Nobody
okay,
even
let me just break this down. Rittenhouse was found not guilty by a jury of his peers, and while Michigan school shooter, we kind of know that he is guilty, but it wasn't racially motivated. Let's go down to Georgia to the Ahmaud Arbery trial. where the white guys murdered a black man in the streets, and they were found guilty of doing that, which I believe were probably racially motivated. Then we can go down to Florida to the black guy that shot at the police officers, subsequently killing his girlfriend or fiance. He was found innocent for self-defense. But let's get right back up to Waukesha, Wisconsin. There's a black guy that went past parade barricades and was swerving and trying to hit innocent people, including children, in a parade, killing six or seven of them, injuring over 60. In some cases, those teenagers are going to have to learn how to walk again. What do we call this guy? He's not a white supremacist, right? But according to what the media labels everybody and what the leftists want everybody else to believe, he should be labeled a supremacist, right? But I'm going to have to stop right there and say he's not a white supremacist. He's a black supremacist. And holy shit, wait for people to come after me for actually saying the truth. He's a black supremacist. And there is a lot of that going on that nobody else is talking about, and I don't give a shit, Chris. I will say it right here, unedited, uncensored, on our show. He is a black supremacist, and he's a racist. So now what? Okay, go ahead. Share your thoughts. I'm
yeah.
done.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think I – what's that here?
Ooh.
There we go.
I got the
Jerry
bomb on that one.
There.
Hold on. Let me just pause that.
But no. You have a guy that's literally
applause.
A black neo-Nazi. A black neo-Nazi. You know, because, I mean, you don't have to be a certain skin color to adhere to, you know, Nazi rhetoric or Nazi beliefs. So yeah, a neo-Nazi is a neo-Nazi, even if you're a black guy. You know, if you say that you hate Jews and that Hitler had it right, by God, you're a neo-Nazi. So, you know, the headline should have been, you know, neo-Nazi that hates white people, you know, runs over children with, you know, a 8,000-pound car. Killing seven people and, you know, seriously injuring 60, you know, but no, that's not the headline. What do? They come out instead and they say it's most definitely not an act of terrorism. I don't know how I have to question what exact terrorism. Apparently it you have to be white. It can't be terrorism.
No, Chris. An act of terrorism is going into a school board as a parent and standing up for your children. That's an act of terrorism.
Right.
We all know it.
Right. If you argue with the school board, I mean, that clearly is, you know, extreme terrorism. But, I mean, this is the point we're at. A lot of people still don't see through it. It's like they take a USB cord from the news outlets, plug it into their brain, and just whatever the media narrative is, they'll passionately argue that is correct. We have a lot of people running around in this world right now that think they are intellectuals because they listen to mainstream media, and they don't have the comprehension to realize that they're really just human parakeets. You don't have to be smart to run around repeating what you heard someone say on the television or on a internet news article or a YouTube channel from the mainstream media. That does not make you an intellectual. It literally, it just makes you a human parakeet.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm at a loss for words. No, I'm not. I'm thinking carefully of how they should come out of my mouth other than the form of diarrhea. Does that make any sense?
Oh,
I don't know.
Sure.
Boy, did we cover a lot tonight. And then we could go on and on and on about this one, couldn't we? But you know what? I think we've been on long enough. So we are going to wrap this up. Yeah, we're going to wrap this up. Listen, everybody that tuned in because you wanted to hear about the Gary Webb story, I promise you we will get to that. Me and Chris are going to have a private conversation about the holidays are coming up. So I don't know how this is going to work for Thursday night. I think next Thursday night is the 23rd. And then it's the 30th, I believe. I don't know. We should be okay on that. We should probably be able to have a show, but we'll get to the Gary Webb thing. Just when certain things come out in the news, the trucking industry, all over, that take precedent over something that has already happened, we have to talk about it since it's fresh in our minds. We will get to Gary Webb, and that will continue on from the MENA Arkansas episode number 10 that we had. Last week, we ended up having Representative Jeremy Munson on and Steve Oatley from Citizen Stringer News. And, you know, sometimes things happen during the week that we have to just – we got to jump on. This week, we had that poor guy in Colorado got sentenced to 110 years for an accident for poor training. I seen pictures of the guy directly after the accident. He was crying. He was visually upset, as well he should have been. But doesn't mean he should get a death sentence. Even though that four people were killed, he didn't intentionally go looking to kill them. So, my opinion, that's all that matters, and Chris's opinion, and a lot of other opinions. But anyway, let's wrap this up. You guys that called in tonight, everybody that listened, you don't know how much that we appreciate you. As soon as this show is wrapped up, I will share this out on the Disrespected Trucker radio show page, and we would appreciate it if you would share this out so people that don't have time tonight, they couldn't listen, maybe they can catch us, you know, tomorrow or Tuesday or Sunday or whatever they got time. They're sitting on the toilet and they need something to listen to. Click on the Disrespected Trucker radio show and let the shit flow. So anyway, I want to just let you guys all know that we appreciate every one of you that listen and contribute to our conversation. And Chris, before we go, say, what do you want to say for your goodbyes?
You know what? Just to everybody out there with the vaccine mandates and everything, I just want to say kind of what I was hitting on earlier. You know, what you're looking at with those, we don't know what cause, we don't know who is susceptible to a fatal reaction because the data is not there. And so when you put out these blanket policies and you tell everybody they have to get it, regardless of whether their personal doctor thinks they might be at risk or not, or they believe they might be at risk, you're literally handing out death sentences to those people. So, you know, if you're one of those people who believe we should run around forcing people to vaccinate, you know what, maybe slow your roll a little bit. We don't have all the clinical trials on this. Those were skipped. Everybody is the experiment at this point. And for God's sakes, never accept big corporations deciding what you are allowed to hear, what experts you are allowed to hear, because right now you might agree with the viewpoint that they are forcing everyone to be exposed to and against the viewpoints that they're hiding from you. But if you give people that power, rest assured there's going to be a day that they're rallying against you and your beliefs. And that's it. Never give up your voice. Never give up your freedom of choice. Never give up. Never give someone the power to tell you what you're allowed to hear. That's called freedom.
And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, from the Disrespected Trucker radio show, if we don't talk to you or if you don't hear us before Christmas, have a Merry Christmas, a safe Christmas, and a Happy New Year. You'll hear from us, but if you can't make it, please share this this episode out to your friends. And help us grow. And God bless each and every one of you. We'll see you next Thursday.